Hello and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, January 31st, 2019. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it's episode 151. In fact, pretty soon, I'll have been doing this podcast for a year. So I think I started the first week of March. So we've got like 4 or 5 more weeks. It'll be a year of the show. That's freaking crazy. I can't believe it's been a year already. Where does time go? I guess when you do a podcast almost daily, then it kind of adds up, huh? Anyways, today is Thursday. And no, it's not Therapy Thursday. That'll be next week. In fact, I'm recording the episode that will be coming out next week tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I think I already announced the guest in maybe an episode, but I'll announce the guest formally later on in the week. Today is not Therapy Thursday. It is Throwback Thursday. And one of the things that I said when I started planning all these new sets of episodes, there is a schedule. I think I posted the link at some point. If you want it, let me know. I'll send you the schedule. There's a schedule for the next like 3 months of podcasts. But one of the things that I said when I first started doing these Throwback Thursday episodes was that I wanted to go back to some things that I really loved when I was much younger. And, you know, I did some Ultraverse, I did some Batman. I'll be doing Invisibles soon. I'm trying to get my – there's somebody that wants to record with me, and I want to get the time right. And if it doesn't happen, then I'll just do it myself. But anyways, that'll be coming up at some point. But one thing that I really loved from back in the day is cross-gen comics. So today we're going to be doing – A quick Throwback Thursday on one of my favorite books from CrossGen, and that is Scion. And if you've never picked this up, I recommend that you can probably find these books for like a quarter or 50 cents at your local comic shop, or if you go to a convention, I'm sure you can find them in the long boxes there. I know that CrossGen put out a good chunk of their books in trade as well. I believe Scion had 3 trades, so you're not going to get the full series. But there were 3 trades of this. The book ran from 2000 to 2004 when the company shut down. So it's, you know, I set this rule up. I said like 15 years was the limit. So it's kind of pushing it, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, it's 2019. So technically it's 15 years, but, whatever. The issues that we're talking about today did come out in the year 2000. In the year 2000. Does anybody remember that? I remember that. I used to watch Conan all the time. But anyways, it came out in 2000, so I guess it does apply. It'd be 19 years ago. And I'll get to what Scion was about, but let's talk about CrossGen real quick, because CrossGen is a really interesting company that kind of came out of nowhere. It was founded in roughly 99, end of 99, by Mark Alessi, who was a tech entrepreneur. This was in, you know, right around the time of the tech bubble. Those of you that were around back in those days may remember them. If you're a little bit younger, you may not know what the tech bubble was. But people were paying huge amounts of money for tech companies back in that era. And Mark Alessi made a fortune. He sold his company to Perot Systems, which, yes, owned by Ross Perot out of Texas. Presidential candidate of 1992, by the way. For all you youngins that may not have been around at that time. And sold the company for $44 million in stock. And that kind of ended up biting him in the butt towards the end of the life of CrossGen. But with this money, he's like, what am I going to do with myself? And he realized, I've always loved comics. I'm a huge comic nerd. I want to have my own comic book company. And that's what he did. He used his $44 million to start CrossGen. And I can't remember what the name of the company was before. It might have just been CrossGen Comics, and then they just kind of dropped the comics. But he ended up starting this company. And what was really interesting, you can find a ton of information on this online. There's plenty of interviews after the company shut down because, I mean, this company had big names on there, right? Chuck Dixon worked for CrossGen. Mark Wade wrote like 3 or 4 books for CrossGen. Butch Geist did art on, what was the name of that book? Roos. And Roos is great. It was kind of like a Victorian detective story. Really good. Really well done. And so they had all these guys. And what was interesting about them, oh, Bart Sears, he did the first. And, what was her name? Barbara, I wish I remember her name. But she did DC work in the 80s and then moved over to Image, in the late 90s, before she went to work for CrossGen. But anyways, the company was interesting in that Mark wanted all the creators to kind of sit around and create books together. He wanted something akin to the Marvel bullpen of the 60s, where everyone had to go into the office and they all had desks next to each other. And so it was very simple and quick and easy for them to communicate on what they wanted to do on the book. And, you know, everybody was basically sitting there, right? So you'd have four tables kind of together. You'd have the writer, the artist, the inker, and the colorist all sitting side by side, and they were able to crank out the books as a result. In fact, for the first 3 years of the company, now granted, the company was only around for 4 years, but for the first 3 years of the company, there was not a single book that was shipped late by CrossGen. And that was a big deal back then because, you know, companies were slipping. And I know that you guys like to make fun of, for example, Doomsday Clock nowadays, that it's always delayed. Listen, it takes a long time to create perfection. Okay, that's all I gotta say. Doomsday's fantastic. Anyways, CrossGen. So that's the way it worked. The company was set up in Florida because that's where Mark lived. He had an office building, and he paid these guys exclusive contracts to fly out to Florida, got them jobs there, got them housing. Of course, those of them that kind of came in towards the latter end of the company got kind of stiffed out of the deal. I remember there was one story, and I can't remember which creator it was, but it is a big name creator. He had gotten a deal to move out to Florida, and then when, like, the day he got there, the company shut down, and he's like, well, what the hell do I do now? Like, I just left my job at whatever it was, Marvel or DC, and now I'm unemployed. So, some of these guys took big risks. For some of them, it paid off if they were in there kind of early on, but, over the long run, like, it just kind of didn't work out. And the reason for that wasn't necessarily CrossGen itself. CrossGen did extremely well. They sold a lot of copies of their books. They won a ton of Harveys, I think like 15 or 20 Harvey Awards. So really well recognized within the industry for the type of book that they published. And they were doing some really innovative and creative stuff, not just in the way that the comics were done, but also in the way that they brought in, for example, the internet into comics. And you gotta remember, this is the year 2000, right? So the internet is basically brand new. I'm trying to think when I got online. I think it was like 96, 97. You know, you had to get on your dial-up on AOL and go in chat rooms or whatever. So it was super slow. We had a dedicated phone line for the internet because I begged for it. You know, I was always online. And, nobody was doing this kind of thing then because the internet was brand new. Brand new. And so there weren't a lot of people still online, right? You couldn't get on your smartphone and go online, right? That's only 10 years ago. Think about that. This is 10 years before even the first iPhone. So you couldn't get on the internet on your phone. I mean, you could, but it was crap. It was a crap experience. And CrossGen had a great website. They put their comics available for purchase on their site. You could read some of the comics online as well. They were way ahead of their time in the way that they were trying to market their stuff for this type of new media. And unfortunately, like I said, it didn't work out. Ross Perot's company, Perot Systems, they ran into some financial trouble because they were fudging their numbers a little bit, and the company didn't do very well. And because Mark had gotten this $44 million buyout in stock, he basically lost a ton of money and as a result had to shut down the company. I mean, the company was doing fine, but, you know, when you have all these things that you're promising people, like housing and cars and this, that, and the other, it can get a little bit complicated. And the company shuttered pretty quickly, and all the stuff was actually auctioned off. Before that happened, though, Mark tried to pitch the company to outside investors. And this is something that we see a lot, right? This is something that Valiant recently had an issue with last year. Matter of fact, last year, almost to the day, I think it was a year, like 2 or 3 days ago. So Dinesh was tweeting about it. I know that Boom Studios, is it Boom or IDW? One of the two recently took a large investment firm, a Chinese firm, to move into TV and movies, for example, because they needed the additional revenue. And this is something that Mark was trying to do in the early 2000s. He tried to pitch the company to a Chinese investor, and that didn't work out very well. So he went to the next big thing and started pitching it around Hollywood. And there were some of the books did get optioned. For example, Way of the Rat, that was optioned. There were a few other ones. I think Way of the Rat was the one that really kind of hurt Mark quite a bit. That was optioned by DreamWorks, so Spielberg. And Spielberg was too busy directing, never read the script, and by that point it was too late, and they couldn't recoup any of their money based on any other kind of TV or movie sales. So finally, since he couldn't do anything, he filed for bankruptcy. And Disney, oddly enough, ended up buying the rights to all the cross-gen characters. Now, this is before Disney bought Marvel. Remember that. This is in 04. Disney bought Marvel in 09, and they only paid $1 million for cross-gen. They paid like $4 billion, I think, to purchase Marvel, $4 or $5 billion. So, huge difference there. And sure, maybe Marvel's got a bigger name recognition. They've been around much longer, but, pretty interesting because, you know, Mark and everyone at CrossGen was doing really interesting and creative stuff. And, they had a ton of books. If you never picked any of these up, again, I highly recommend that. There were a ton of great ones. There was, Mystic, Meridian, Scions, the one that we'll be talking about today, Way of the Rats. What am I missing? Route 666. Man, there were a ton of books. If you get a chance, go in and look up CrossGen Comics back catalog. And, I guarantee you there's going to be at least one book that will fit the type of thing that you like reading. And for me, CrossGen was fantastic because CrossGen dealt heavily in science fiction and fantasy. And as a result, I was really drawn to that kind of thing. And of course, the books were beautiful, so that helped quite a bit. The art is, you know, the writing's fantastic on all of these books as well. Some of them do get a little bit warty, in particular the Mark Waid ones, and that's not a rag on Mark Waid. I think he's a terrific writer. But, I think he did go through an era where he was extremely worthy. Wordy. Not worthy. He is worthy. He is Thor. Wordy. And, but you know, that kind of harkens back to an era of comics that he really enjoyed, right? I mean, if you go back to like 70s, 80s comics, they're extremely wordy. So, that's not really a surprise. But you do see some of that, if you do pick up some of these books. Not so much Scion, which is what we'll be talking about. The interesting thing about all these books is while technically they are all belong in a shared universe, there's not necessarily a ton of crossover stuff. Now, some of that may change later on, in the company as you start reading this stuff, because there is a huge event. There's a book called Negation, that, you know, kind of went through the Negation War. Really fantastic because there is a lot of mythology that gets discussed, as a result of setting up this universe. And, I'll talk a little bit about this when we get actually to talking about Scion, but within the CrossGen universe, there are these people called the Sigil Bearers. And the Sigil is basically this, what can we say? Emblem? It's not really an emblem. A tattoo? I don't know. I don't know what he calls it. These people end up having this symbol on some part of their body, because they've been chosen to be Sigil Bearers. And basically the sigil is the CrossGen logo. So if you look that up, you'll know what the sigil looks like. And this is placed on these people by, some of the gods of the CrossGen universe. It's not the gods. This is going to get really complicated real quick. I'll give you the short end of the story. There are gods in the CrossGen universe. In fact, the sigil symbolizes the two main gods, but, there's also this whole thing about Atlantis. And, man, I can't remember the name of that book. Crux. C-R-U-X. It's, the story of this group of Atlanteans. And it deals before the fall of Atlantis and after the fall of Atlantis. And, two of the characters in that book end up kind of ascending, almost to godlihood because of their knowledge and wisdom. And, they play an important role in the entire universe. And part of the issue is that there is kind of a dark multiverse, and beings in that multiverse, hence the negation thing, are trying to break out of their universe and take over ours. And these Atlantean beings are kind of choosing warriors throughout space and time in order to help them fight these battles. In fact, Ethan, that we'll talk about in a second, from Scion, he is one of the Sigil Bearers. And in the arc that we're going to be discussing, and I'll be talking about issues 1 through 6, and it'll be pretty quick because it is a very quick read. In the first 6 issues, we don't know anything about what this sigil is. Now, like I said, these books are connected because it is a shared universe, but they are spread out across both space and time. There's different planets. There are different factions within each planet. There are some books that take place tens of thousands of years in the past, some somewhere in between, maybe Middle Ages, some in the not too distant future, and some way off into the future. Because this is a huge part of CrossGen to have all these things be connected through this sigil bearer thing. So again, if you read all of the books, you will definitely get a lot more out of this background story, especially once you get into the negation war. But you don't have to read all the books to really get the gist of what's going on. In fact, one thing that I liked is they kind of introduced this sigil bearer concept in the first page of pretty much all the number one issues. So if you pick those up, you'll see the first like two or three pages have the same narration bubbles. And that is very much on purpose because it's going through this kind of prophecy thing that's lurking in the background as a concept in all the books. Really fascinating stuff. If you start reading these and you really start getting into them, the mythology of CrossGen is really, really fantastic. And you'll get a lot of that in Crux. In fact, the book that we'll be talking about today, Scion, is directly related to Crux. Again, you don't have to read Crux, but it is directly related because there is a character that is actually one of these Atlantean beings from Crux, in a different form. And, the form that he takes here is very normal. I don't know, is normal the right word? I mean, he's like a genetically engineered servant, but, you don't know any of this yet. So if I'm spoiling it for you, I apologize. But you should read it because it's fantastic. So, Scion takes place. It's really hard to say because it appears to take place in the past. It is very much a sword and sorcery type of story. I've heard it compared a lot to like Lord of the Rings, for example, and there are definitely some similarities. However, unlike Lord of the Rings, and I think what sets this apart is that even though it is sword and sorcery, there is technology involved in the story. At one point, there's a character that dies, and they have a funeral for him, and his casket's just, like, floating in the air, and it's made out of metal, and it's got, you know, doors that close in over him, and these things light up, and it just kind of floats in space. Or, they have these duels that actually play a key role in the full story of Scion. And when they have these duels, they do it with swords, except they're more like lightsabers than just regular swords. So, and you see a couple other things like that, like there's certain gadgets that are sometimes attached to, body armor, for example, when they go into battle. They don't use a whole lot of them, but, there's definitely a lot of hints of technology being very important in the society. And it's very obvious that they have very advanced technology because in this world there are something that is called the lesser races. And the lesser races are basically genetically engineered humans that were created over time to be servants to the upper classes. And, you know, depending on where you are in this world, they could be just, you know, maids or whatever, cooks or whatever else. Whereas in other factions of this universe, they're literally slaves, right? Like mine workers and things like that. But, you know, if you create these kind of beings, obviously you have to have the technology. And I don't think they ever really talk about it. I don't remember. I didn't go back and reread the entire thing. I'm up to like issue, I think 13 or 14 on my reread of this, and I haven't reread it in quite a while. But, it's really fascinating. In fact, I do remember the end of this book, and I'm not gonna spoil it, but, it ends with an epic battle. That it's kind of the culmination of, you know, 43 issues worth of story. And then you kind of fast forward to the future. And then everything is definitely more futuristic, right? Like people are wearing more modern clothing. There's skyscrapers and they have iPad looking devices. Pretty cool stuff. Anyways, that is, that's kind of the gist of Scion. And Scion centers around, a kid named Ethan, who is a prince of this realm. In this planet or in this world, there are two factions basically that are at war with each other. And these two factions kind of have an uneasy truce right now. So the two factions are the Ravens and the Falcons. And that is kind of their emblem that they use when they go to war, for example. What the crest that is on their clothing, the crests that are on their shield, things like that, right? So what symbolizes it? It'd be like their flag, right? One's the Falcons, one's the Ravens. The Falcons live on the western side of the world, and the Ravens live on the eastern side of the world. And they've been at war for a long time. Right now they're kind of in an easy peace. And part of the way that they get around constantly being at war with each other is they have these, gladiatorial events, basically, where they each choose a champion and they fight it out in an arena. Like, kind of like what you saw in, the last Thor movie, right? When Thor and Hulk fight in that arena. Similar to that, right? You pick a champion, the champions go at it, and whoever wins is the victor of the war, right? That way you avoid all kinds of bloodshed. Really interesting, right? Very advanced way of doing things. Of course, it doesn't really work out very well for everybody. And in fact, the Ravens are very much a warmongering nation. They want to actually be at war. They want to physically defeat the Falcons. And Ethan is a prince of the Falcons. And, I can't remember the name of the guy that runs the prince of the Raven Nation. I think it's Brahm, if I'm not mistaken. And, so at the beginning of the book, we learn a little bit about Ethan. He's a young kid. He's probably, they're talking about this is his first battle. You know, he's going to enter into adulthood. So my assumption is he's maybe 16 tops. I mean, this is comics, so there's some muscularity. Maybe he's a little bit older, but I doubt he's any younger than 15 or 16. And, he never has really been in one of these battles. He does have two older brothers and an older sister as well. His parents rule the nation. They seem to be very popular with the people. And, they seem to be fairly benevolent. Unlike the king and prince of the Raven Realm, who really just want to get at war. In fact, there's some implied, things in this first six issues of this book that it is actually the king of the Raven Nation that maybe set this whole thing up. Not really necessarily explained, and it could just be implied. Because he does say at one point, like, you know, this kind of fell in our lap, it's perfect. But he says it with this, like, grin where you're like, oh man, this guy set this whole thing up. If you read the whole, story of Sion from beginning to end, that may not necessarily be the case. Because Ethan has a little servant, one of these lesser race people. His name is Skink. And as I mentioned previously, Skink is kind of one of these incarnations of this Atlantean super being. And so, it's obvious that maybe the Raven Nation didn't set things up. But within these first six issues, you wouldn't really know any of that stuff, right? So basically, he's getting ready to go into this battle. And Skink is obviously very, you know, dedicated to serving this prince. They've kind of grown up together, and sure, Skink is one of these lesser races. He's not fully human, but they grew up together, right? He's been his servant since they were little kids, and he's got a great job in the palace, so he cares a lot for Ethan, and Ethan obviously cares a lot for him as well. When they go into this battle, you know, he has this sword crafted by a swordsmith, and it's something similar to like his grandfather's sword, so it means a lot to him and his whole family. They go into battle, he's fighting Prince Brahm, and as they're duking it out, Brahm almost takes him down, and Ethan brings up his sword and kind of slashes Brahm's face open, so Brahm ends up with a giant scar across his face. And, you know, the Raven Nation calls foul. They're like, you know, you broke the rules. You have an illegal weapon that you're using, a modified weapon. And, as it turns out, that's not the case. The weapon's fine. But right before this battle, he ended up somehow getting this sigil. Somehow he was chosen to be a sigil bearer. And the sigil does give the sigil bearer abilities. And we don't really know what those abilities are within these first six issues. We do know that it gives them maybe extra strength, extra agility, endurance, quite possibly super strength, and for certain, extremely fast healing. And so, after he slashes the scar through Brahm, he apologizes, like, I don't know what happened, I can't believe it, I didn't do this on purpose, this is not a legal weapon, and, you know, these people are warmongering, right? They want to start trouble. And he's like, I want retribution, you need to pay me because of the scar. And, you know, they have the medics look at it. The medics can't fix it even with their technology because it's so deep. And finally the Raven King's like, listen, we need to set this right, right? He needs to go to jail. And so the King's like, no, we're not sending our son to jail. And Ethan's like, look, I didn't do this on purpose. I'll do whatever just to keep the peace, right? Because the Falcons don't want to be at war. They kind of like this era of prosperity and peace. And maybe things aren't going so well over in Raven Nation, but for the Falcons, it's fine. And he's like, look, I'll go over there, just be a year, I'll be fine, you know, I'll be in a dungeon at the palace, and it'll just be a year, and I'll come back. And so, you know, they praise him for being such an adult about the whole thing. He goes off to back to the Raven Nation, and obviously he's not going to be treated very well. And Brom makes sure that, he, any chance he gets, he just like pushes him around and knocks him out. And, at one point he takes his sword and goes and tries to slash him in the face to give him the same kind of scar. And he, as he's bleeding, Brom kind of heads off, and him and Skink are in the cell, and, you know, the wound is healing. And this woman shows up, and next thing they know, they're not in the dungeon anymore. They're out somewhere in the forest of Raven Nation. And he's like, well, what the hell? They're going to think I escaped. And this girl kind of wants his help because she sees how good a person he is. And then we learn kind of one of the subplots of this whole book where, you know, she works for the underground. And it's a group of people that have decided to band together to free the lesser races. Because while in the West they are servants, and, you know, maybe technically not entirely free, in the East, where the Ravens are, they are complete slaves. They have no rights. They have no right to an opinion. They are severely beaten, brutalized throughout their history, right? From the time they're born, they're put to work, until the time they die. And when they die, they just replace them with somebody else. In fact, they even say that in the book. And it's pretty tragic. So she works for a group that wants to get rid of this whole thing and thinks that Ethan can help her. Well, as this is happening, Prince Brom decides, oh my god, let's go see what this idiot's doing. They go to the dungeon and see that Ethan's escaped. So there's a search party sent out. There's a bounty hunter sent out. There's a couple of issues of battles. This happens over like two issues. And Ethan learns through this whole thing that the king is using his quote-unquote escape. Remember, he didn't really escape. He also didn't really give this guy a scar on purpose. But he's using this as a means to declare war on the Falcon Nation. So Ethan and Skink decide, like, hey, we got to go back, right? Like, I'm a prince. I got to see what the hell's going on. We're going to go back and tell my dad, and, you know, that way they can prepare for the invasion. And, of course, you know, he has to battle through some other guys. He steals one of the scout ships, and it just so happens that on the scout ship, there are plans for the invasion, so they know exactly where the invasion is going to happen, where they're landing, how many troops, all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a huge advantage for the Falcons in terms of this war. Of course, that doesn't go very well because there's a giant northeastern storm, and he gets shipwrecked. As he gets shipwrecked, he meets some, it seems, a group of lesser race people that live in an underwater city. We'll learn more about that at some point. It is kind of important to the overall piece of the story. But at first he's like, did I really see that? And Skink's like, I don't know. I just remember getting knocked out in the storm and waking up. Because of course Skink knows what's going on, right? Skink is one of these Atlantean guys. But right now we don't know any of that. Right now we don't know any of that. So he gets back and sees his sister. They go to the castle. Ethan warns his dad and there's a huge battle. At the end of the battle, Brom is fighting it out with Ethan's older brother and ends up killing him. And that leads to the next set of shenanigans that happens in this book. That takes us basically through issue 6. In issue 7 is when we have the funeral for Ethan's brother. And it's quite fascinating to see this whole thing. Because you know, the first 5 or 6 issues that you're reading this book, you're kind of learning about the culture of this place, how the civilization works. And once you get to issue 7 and you see this funeral, things get a little bit deeper. And it's obvious that there was a lot of work and effort put into creating a large, expansive mythology for all these books. I mean, this book in particular, because that's what I'm talking about today. But for all the books, I mean, you know, Mark and team had a very cohesive vision of what they wanted their books to be. And it really shows when you start reading these books. This particular issue, by the way, I never give the creative team, written by Ron Mars, same guy, with art by Jim Chung, which I think, what was Jim Chung doing? Was it Teen Titans? I think he was doing Teen Titans. So, I mean, they've got big names on this, right? Ron Mars, Jim Chung, Don Hilsman, and Cesar Rodriguez is the creative team for the book. Definitely recommend checking it out. I mean, the covers are all fantastic, and the art that you see in the cover is basically the art that you're getting inside. So I definitely recommend you check these out. They do read very quick. I think the first issue might be a little bit slower read than the rest of them because you are setting up a lot of stuff, and you're kind of getting this young kid, onto this hero's journey. But once the action kicks in, I mean, Cyan, I think, is one of my favorite books that CrossGen did. The other one being Roos. I really, really enjoy that. But again, Roos is very wordy. So you will take a lot of time writing each of those. And that was Mark Waid and Butch Geis doing Roos. But yeah, I absolutely loved rereading this. I've been meaning to reread my cross-gen collection. And I do have a full set of cross-gen books. There's a few universes that I have a full set of. This is one, Cross-Gen's one, Valiant's one. I'm trying to think what else. There's a couple other ones that I have. I think I have a full set of Milestone. I gotta check on that though. I might be missing an issue or two. And, I just absolutely adored it. I'm so glad that I'm going back and doing this. It does give me more work, right? Because when I read Prime again, when I was doing the Malibu stuff, I kept going with that. And, now that I'm almost to the end, I want to pick up some of the other books and read those. And now having read these first six issues, well, technically seven, I guess, of CrossGen's Scion, I can't wait to dive into the rest of the series, all 43 issues. And then, of course, I'm going to go back and read some of the other ones. I remember really digging, what was the other one? There was another one that was kind of fantasy-like, Meridian. I really enjoyed that one. What was the sci-fi one? Oh, man. Anyways, doesn't matter. If you can find these, go check them out. I'm sure you can pick up the trades really cheap somewhere, but I recommend you just go ahead and get the single issues, because you're not going to get any series fully collected in trade. You will be able to find most of these in single issues. And Scion is one of those that did have a very definite ending, so you know, you're not going to be missing anything once you start picking up the story. This is a 5 out of 5. I love it. I love it. You know, 19 years later. And I think that says a lot for a book, right? When you can pick it up, almost two decades later and it still reads fresh and new and exciting. And, you know, comics have changed a lot in the past 20 years, but, this one definitely holds up. So check it out. That is Scion, S-C-I-O-N from CrossGen Comics. God, I love this stuff. Can't wait to read more. All right. That's going to be it. That's it for me for this week. Dustin will be back tomorrow with the headlines. But then I'll be back on Monday with Top of the Pile. So, full week again next week. We should have, 5 episodes next week, unlike this week. Well, this week I think we had like 6. I don't know how that happened. But, if you want to get in touch with me, Twitter, best place, always, @GeekVine. You can email me, yell@comictalk.today. This can wrap it up for me. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one.